Hey, everyone. This is Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup, and we're coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C. after a two-week hiatus. It is October the 10th, 2009, Columbus Day weekend, and I will, of course, be talking about Columbus Day. Why in the world do we celebrate a holiday that marks the basically the beginning of the Native American Holocaust? 65 million Native Americans were massacred over several years by the mercantilists, the colonialists, the capitalists, the royalists, the monarchists of their day. Not something I think that should be celebrated, for the Native Americans in this, not only in this country, but the entire Western Hemisphere. Columbus Day just marks another segment in the Trail of Tears. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. The toll-free number, if you'd like to call into the program, is 800-313-9443. That is 800-313-9443. That's toll-free. There's a lot to talk about this past week, of course. Last week I was away. My mother was in the hospital in critical condition and brought up a lot about the sorry state of healthcare in this country, how the insurance companies are really functioning as the death panels, unlike what we hear from other people. The death panels exist. They're called Cigna, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Aetna, WellPoint. You know, this list goes on. Humana, Hospital Corporation America, they are the death panels. If there's time, I'll talk a little bit about that. I'm happy to say my mother is no longer in critical condition, but certainly not out of the woods. Anyway, so we are live tonight from Washington, D.C., and we will be joined this evening by novelist and journalist Lynn Bracken. Lynn has written several books, including the first book to basically suggest that 9/11 was an inside operation, an inside job, and he'll be joining us later on in the program. What do we also have this week? We had this total surprise announcement that Barack Obama is the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. Not president for a year. U.S. troops may be increasing in Afghanistan, remotely piloted vehicles blowing away wedding parties in small villages in Afghanistan, northwest Pakistan, and in Iraq. We still have troops in Iraq. We have troops in Afghanistan. Obama wants to build 7 military bases in Colombia, about 3 bases in the Republic of Georgia. We have bases being reported now in Uganda. He gets the Nobel Peace Prize. It is absolutely astounding that an individual who is basically following orders from George Bush's crony, Bob Gates, who remains as the defense secretary, could get the Nobel Peace Prize. Anyway, we will be back right after this break with peace prizes and a whole lot of other subjects. This is Wayne Mattson from Washington, D.C.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
This Saturday Roundup coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C., this October the 10th. And before we go to our guest, Lynn Bracken, I want to just play this clip of the Norwegian Nobel Prize representative announcing that Barack Obama was the recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. If you go to YouTube and watch this video, look at the man behind him. When the Nobel Prize representative mentions that the prize goes to Barack Obama, the Norwegian guy behind him starts laughing. It's unbelievable. You've got to watch that clip on YouTube. But let's listen to the announcement that President Obama received the Nobel Peace Prize, and then we'll go to our guest. Okay, I guess we won't be going to that clip. Let's just go to Len Bracken, and in a way of introduction, I want to mention that Len has covered the bowels of the Treasury Department, the Federal Reserve. These, especially the Federal Reserve, is not a very transparent operation. A lot of what they do is done in virtual secrecy. Len has, of course, a very special take with his inside knowledge of both agencies. Let's go to our guest, Len Bracken, who's joining us on the phone from Washington, D.C. Len, are you there?
I sure am. Thanks for having me, Wayne.
Okay. Well, listen, I've got a clip I want to play a little later of Gerald Celente, who's been saying the dollar is finished. But just to kind of set this up, you've been covering the Treasury Department, the Federal Reserve for quite some time, and a lot of people are talking about the gloom and doom aspect, that this is real, that the dollar may be collapsing. We may be seeing it dropped as a reserve currency, especially the Arabs were being reported in Russia and as dropping it as a currency of the oil business, the oil exchange. So why don't you fill us in on what you've uncovered in the last, several months?
Well, the dollar is always a tricky question because, really right now there's nothing there that can replace it. So I think that some of the dollar doom and gloom is probably premature, although it probably will decline. On the other hand, and this is the thing about economics, there's always on the one hand and on the other hand, there is the possibility that if the dollar starts to decline too much, then the Federal Reserve and some of the major banks can take some money out of the stock market. In other words, they can sort of have a crash of whatever proportion they wish in the stock market, and the dollar tends to be inversely correlated with the stock market. So if the stock market goes down, the dollar would go up. So that's they always have that safety valve, and or at least up until now they've always had that safety valve. And it remains to be seen if at some point people will no longer want dollar-denominated assets, for example, our treasury bills. Just this last week, Latvia, it had a bond issuance that no bidders. And the United States has got the deepest and most liquid bonds market in the entire world, and that's probably not going to happen here. But what could happen is that interest rates should start to creep up, and we could see either a slow decline in the dollar, which is the most likely thing, or if there's some event, another 9/11, or for whatever reason, you could have a waterfall collapse of the dollar.
Well, you mentioned Latvia. Of course, Latvia was one of the countries where basically the financial system collapsed. There were people were out in the street rioting, just like the situation in Iceland, where Iceland has basically gone bankrupt. Now they're being forced to join the European Union. The leftist party in Iceland, which is a member of this coalition, is bolting. They don't like the deal that the deals are going to have to make, which is basically this country is in receivership. And they're looking at basically being taken over by Brussels. And having lived in Iceland for a number of years, I know they're nationalistic. They don't like outside influences, even though they did host a NATO base for several decades. But do you think that what is happening in Latvia, what's happening in Iceland, what almost happened in Ireland and may still happen in Ireland, as well as some other countries, could actually happen here? We know that banks are collapsing on the average of maybe two or three a week. We're seeing more bank failures. What do you think about the prognosis for a total collapse of the economic system like we've seen in Latvia, Iceland, and maybe also in Ireland?
Right. you know, I have an essay up on your website called The Invisible Currency of Fascism. And, you know, basically, you know, we have the ability to print, and because we are the reserve currency, and then with this printing, the central bankers and the Treasury Department are trying to keep all of the assets afloat. And the reason they want to keep these asset prices high is because if they start to fall, then they will trigger these credit default swaps and other derivatives. And this is what's commonly known as the derivatives time bomb, because quite often these derivatives are bought as sort of insurance, but it could be that the person that they bought the insurance from, it could be a hedge fund, could be another bank, may not be able to pay up once these contracts are triggered. And that is a very real possibility. If we start getting this kind of daisy chain reaction of credit default swaps and other derivatives, interest rate derivatives, in fact, say, for example, if the interest rates start to creep up, then that could trigger, you know, a lot of these derivatives. And then that could have, you know, many more banks and financial institutions and sort of the shadow banking system, could be imperiled. It's a very real possibility. And in fact, a lot of people are talking about green shoots now, but, it could be that, we face more risk now than we did any time in the past 2 years, because these too big to fail banks are just getting bigger and bigger with the collapse of other banks. They're just, you know, buying up the smaller banks as they fail.
I was just going to say, where could all this go? Are we talking about we're talking about the bank failures? We're also hearing that pension funds could be in jeopardy. We know that the problem with the housing market basically collapsing. Now we're talking about they're talking about commercial real estate may be the next thing that collapses. Is this a house of cards where as you said, one thing, a daisy chain, one thing could lead to another, and we could go into a full-blown depression? I've often thought we were in a mild depression anyway, even though the corporate media talked about a recession. But where do you think? Do you think there's other factors out there that if you know, the commercial real estate collapses, pension funds are getting trouble, that we could see a chain reaction?
Well, that's right, and with the end result being something, you know, unrelated to related to the financial crisis, but we could have social unrest. I think it's a very real possibility, in large part because so much pressure is being put on the dollar. They're trying to bail out all the banks, bail out all the commercial real estate, keep everything afloat, but that pressure has to go somewhere. And so far, they've been, you know, putting all that pressure on the dollar. Now, if they try to go ahead and let some of these things fail, in order to bolster the dollar, or maybe they raise interest rates a little bit to bolster the dollar, then the economy can tank even more. So Federal Reserve, the Treasury Department, from what I can see, they're trying to really thread the needle. And, most people are sort of suspicious that they won't be able to do it, because it seems to me, you know, that they really have the interest of one class in mind, and that is, you know, the financial class. And they really don't care about the majority of the people. That's why in my article, you know, I said that, many people are saying that this nationalization the bailout of the banks is socialistic. It's not really socialistic, it's fascistic. And the fascism is really this financial elite that has taken hold of the government. There's this deep capture of the government by the financial elite, particularly people that come out of Goldman Sachs.
Right. We hear about Goldman Sachs, and I think one of the reasons Governor John Corzine, the Democratic governor of New Jersey, is in trouble is, although this happened after he was the head of Goldman Sachs, people associate his name with Goldman Sachs, and he's behind in the polls right now. And I'm not sure it has much to do with Democrat, because the guy opposing him, Chris Christie, is basically a fascist out of the Justice Department. He's a buddy of Michael Chertoff, a U.S. attorney for North Jersey. By all reading all tea leaves, Christie should not even be a player in New Jersey politics, but he is, and I think the reason is because people, you know, think of Corzine, think of Wall Street, they think of his association with Goldman Sachs, and Goldman Sachs, I think, has his there's this visceral reaction to Goldman Sachs. I think it's the bête noire of what we're seeing going on right now. But you mentioned Goldman Sachs. Why is it? I mean, they're not the only bad actor, but why is it Goldman Sachs is being singled out for a lot of criticism?
Well, I think it's because they have so many people in positions of power, and they also have so much leverage. So and so much, you know, such a high percentage of what they call, you know, it's a capital at risk, right? So this value at risk. So they, even though we've had this big crisis, Goldman Sachs has gone right back into these derivative trades, which are so risky, and they have, you know, more of them than pretty much anybody. J.P. Morgan Chase has probably the most, but as a percentage of their you know, the base of their capital, you know, I think that, you know, Goldman Sachs is the highest. So in other words, they have these people in positions of power. They've been given all this money, and then rather than
taking
risk.
Well, Len, hold that thought. We've got a commercial break. We'll be right back more about the economic situation right after this break. This is Wayne Mattson from Washington, D.C.
This is RVN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming in live tonight from Washington, D.C. And the call-in number, the toll-free number, if you'd like to call in to talk to myself or our guest tonight, Len Bracken, a longtime reporter covering the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve. That number is 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. 443. Getting back to you, Len, I'm looking at the Republic Broadcasting Network's webpage, and just the headlines here. Was the business elite behind the Honduran coup? There's reports on Hugo Chavez and President Lula talking about an alternative to, you know, the IMF, the World Bank. As we know in the past, in the 1980s and the 90s, the IMF basically devastated the economies of Argentina, Brazil, and other Latin American countries, Mexico as well. Do you think people like Geithner and Paulson, who you covered Paulson, you covered Bernanke at the Federal Reserve, are these individuals, do they get it? Are they part of this elite that absolutely could care less about the unemployed, people without health care? What's your take of these individuals, and do you think that there is you know, a lot of truth to the fact that these people meet behind closed doors and conspire and plot to enrich themselves and their wealthy friends?
Right. You know, it's always very difficult to sort of, you know, to guess motives on people and say exactly what goes through people's minds. But one of the things one of the points I made in my article was that I really do think that this financial crisis was engineered, and it's one of the similarities with 9/11. And you know, I don't think that we're ever going to get to the bottom of it. And I'll tell you in part why. If you look at the Justice Department, which you mentioned just before we went to the break, they've only filled 27% of the political appointments that they could have filled. You know, here we are, you know, fairly deep into you know, Obama's, you know, term, and you know, he doesn't have the people in place to go after this financial fraud. So you know, I don't want to, you know, say exactly what motivates these people, but it does seem very suspicious, particularly on the part of Paulson, you know, because you know, he oversaw the demise of his rival Lehman, and you know, in a more general sense, I think that the regulators, as well as the you know, the market participants, they knew that these deals were going to blow up. So I don't know if it'd be interesting for your listeners, but I could sort of explain, you know, a little bit exactly how this whole thing happened, and you know, why the crisis sort of broke out in the summer of 2007. Or we could, you know, I could skip that and go on to something else.
Yeah. Well, why don't we go into that? You talked about this as a financial 9/11, and why don't you explain how that actually happened, and you know, the mechanics, and also what's the purpose? What's the end goal here with having this happen? Is it to create a very few corporations where governments themselves are wholly owned subsidiaries of these corporations? Explain a little bit about what happened in 07.
Well, the basic thing was is that people were making money by borrowing short term and then investing long term. And the instruments were commercial paper. So a bank would go to a money market fund and say, okay, we'll give you 4% and interest if we can borrow on a 1 to 6 week basis. And then the money market fund would in turn, pay interest to the people that have money in there, but a smaller amount, and they would make the smaller amount and they would make the spread. But then the investment banks that had borrowed this money on a 1 to 6 week basis that they could just continually roll over would invest in these credit, these securitized products, the CDOs, and they would do this for 20, 30 years. And so when the prices of the assets inside these CDOs, these securitized products, when they fell, that triggered the default. And maybe they had written insurance, say with AIG, which you've done some excellent reporting, by the way, on AIG, and AIG may have sold them these kind of default swaps, but then they didn't have the money to come back and pay up on that. So that's roughly what it is. As far as the overall plan, I wish I knew. A lot of people think that their goal is to have a one world currency. There may be currency blocks. For example, there might be the euro and then Asian currency and then the Amero here in America.
And the Afro they're talking about for Africa.
Right.
You look at some of these world leaders and you just wonder, I mean, many of them were elected in dubious elections. Certainly that was the case with George W. Bush. It's the case with President of Mexico, Calderon. Stephen Harper up in Canada. These are the three countries, of course, in NAFTA, what some people think will become the North American Union. Harper is a minority prime minister, yet he shows no sign of leaving anytime soon. These people, we have Sarkozy in France, this awful fascist, Berlusconi. He's not only a fascist, but he's a pervert. He basically runs the Italian media. He may now be prosecuted. They lifted his immunity. We have people like Tony Blair, who they're talking about being the president of post-Lisbon Treaty Europe. Phony Tony. How do you explain? Are these individuals part of this whole? Well, and we'll get to that right after the break. But I want to talk about this sort of new breed of neocons or neocapitalists, whatever you want to call them. But we'll be right back. After this short break, this is Wayne Master from Washington.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Master Report, the Saturday Roundup, and we're joined tonight by financial reporter Len Bracken, who's covered all the activities. In the Federal Reserve, the very non-transparent Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department. And if you'd like to call in to the program, the number toll-free is 800-313-9443. Len, we were talking before the break about this new breed of, I don't know whether you call them neo-capitalists, neo-conservatives, but these world leaders that get together. Now it's the G20. Of course, that brings in people like Lula in Brazil and the Chinese and the Indians and President Kirchner of Argentina. But do you see that there's a new sort of Cold War now between the North and the South? And I don't mean the Civil War North and South, but the northern industrialized countries and these emerging powers, Brazil, India, certainly Russia and China are in this mix. South Africa is the stage being set now where these emerging economic powers are saying we don't like the fact that decisions are made at the Bilderberg meetings and the Davos conclave and these other the former G8 meetings. What do you think is going on behind the scenes?
Well, it does look like there's definitely a pushback, and I think that people are fed up with the all of the countries in the world are fed up with the fact that we're able to print our own money out of thin air and sort of abuse the system of being the reserve currency power. The other thing I would say is that they have these theories of imperialism. If you look in the left, in fact Lenin thought that would be the last chain in capitalism would be with imperialism. And what I would say is that you have this financial elite and the politicians that they back, and you just really never know how far they'll go. I mean, it's heartening that they are faced with some opposition at this point, but they're in positions of power. They're well entrenched, and you can't underestimate just how far they could take the things. And you ask where are they going? It's really hard to say, but it does seem like they're in. Seem to be intent on further impoverishing people and maximizing their riches.
Right. Now I mentioned at the outset of the program the fact that Barack Obama has now received the Nobel Peace Prize, but it's also true that Barack Obama received a lot of support, financial support, his campaign from Wall Street, from Goldman Sachs, from the other big Wall Street firms. Do you think that he is basically a puppet of individuals, that what he says is not what he does? You mentioned also the fact that there's all these Bush holdovers, the most glaring example being Bob Gates as defense secretary, but we know that people burrowed down from political jobs into senior civil service positions from the Bush administration, and now have these civil service positions in the Obama administration. Nothing's done. The fact that there's still many U.S. attorneys under Bush that remain as U.S. attorneys, these cronies of the Republicans. What do you see as far as Obama being basically Malcolm Forbes, the late Malcolm Forbes said, his balloon was called the capitalist tool. Do you think that Obama is, in fact, a capitalist tool?
Hey, it seems that way to me. I was surprised to see that he was golfing with the head of UBS after they'd made some kind of deal with the U.S. government and these overseas millionaire tax cheats with their Swiss banks. And after they make this deal, there is Obama and Martha's Vineyard playing golf with the guy. And they say that they get their information about the economy from the heads of J.P. Morgan Chase and Goldman Sachs. And it does seem to me that, they're following the shots. I mean, there's probably some autonomous movement in certain realms, but I think that they're, at least in financial matters, they're probably taking their orders from Wall Street and from the square mile in London.
Right, and of course, for most of the working class in the United States, the only time they'll ever see Martha's Vineyard is on those shots of Obama or whoever it is, either playing golf or on some sailboat up there. Martha's Vineyard, like the Hamptons and Long Island, these are places where these people live, where they socialize with one another. These people are as far removed from the working people in this country as you can possibly get.
Right. And I guess you were going to play a clip from Gerald Celente.
Why don't we do that now, and then you can comment on what he says, because he has some very critical issues. Why don't we just play this clip if we can? It's the second clip with Gerald Celente, a longtime observer of the financial systems.
And for more on the dollar's prospects, now across
maybe we don't have
RT's
that clip. We'll play that when we get it.
Joined by Gerald Celente, he's the director of the Trade Research Institute there in the U.S. Priya, firstly, what is the reaction to this news in the U.S.?
Well, many experts are predicting that this could be an economic battle between the United States and China, and Americans are worried that this could be the demise of the dollar. Well, joining me to help weigh in on this issue is the director of the Trans Research Institute, Gerald Celente. Mr. Celente, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
First of all, can you tell me why do you think this happened?
Well, it was a trend that's been long predicted, and we've been predicting it. I say it over and over again. You can't print phantom money out of thin air, backed by nothing and producing practically nothing without destroying the dollar. And they've been doing it for decades. It accelerated in 2008 under George Bush and his building trade deficits, and then finally the TARP program that cost in excess of $700 billion to bail out the failing banks and financial institutions. And then it was reinstituted to an even greater number by President Barack Obama, printing another several hundred billions of dollars worth of valueless money. And the whole world knows it. And everyone could see it. It's no surprise. The only surprise it is that it's taken this long.
So what do you think this means for the American dollar? Many people are saying that this is the demise of the dollar. Do you think that's true?
It is true. And it's more than just the demise of the dollar. This is going to be felt worldwide. There's a major financial crisis at hand. The United States, the world's superpower, is failing on its most basic level. And that's the golden rule. Those who have the gold rule. And America's losing its gold. It's losing the value of its currency.
So what can be done?
Okay,
at this point?
I think we
should
heard enough.
The average.
Len, what do you think about what Celente said there? That the dollar isn't worth the paper it's printed on.
Right. Well, I think the listeners should be careful too, because rather than just rush out and make any bets against the dollar, because it might take a while before this happens. I mean, we really don't know. It could happen very quickly, but these things tend to play out over time. Robert Fisk had an article that sort of sparked this debate, and he said that the dollar would no longer, oil would no longer be priced in dollars beginning in 2018. So there's still a little bit of time. But the other thing is that, there's probably a political motive to, there's a couple of motives for the administration to tank the dollar. One would be if the dollar becomes less precious, then our exports are cheaper. So it could be a way to stimulate jobs. And that could have a political expedience to it. The other thing is that if the dollar becomes less worth less, then we pay back our debts with dollars that aren't worth as much. It's easier to pay off our debt.
Right.
So those are the
let's yeah. Okay, we have a caller calling from down under. Kevin calling from Australia. Let's bring Kevin on. Kevin, are you with us?
Yeah, hi there, Wayne.
Yes.
I like your show a whole lot. I think that you're one of the most accurate commentators out there, and I, as soon as I see you maybe on Alex Jones or wherever, I always pay particular attention of what you've got to say, because it's turned out that it's been most accurate.
Well,
so
thank you.
That's a bit of a pat on the back there, but you deserve it. Hey, look, I've been watching the USA for a long time. I started watching it like a hawk when George Bush and his second in command got up to the things that they did in 9/11. I mean, that was disgusting. But anyway, before that, I watched it closely, and I particularly watched the steel industry, because I have a real interest in the steel industry, because I've worked in it for a long time. And when I noticed that the U.S. was deliberately destroying the ability to produce steel, I mean, any industrial nation in the whole world, they need steel. You need steel to build, for construction. You need steel for the car industry. You need steel, special alloy steels for the aviation industry. The whole, industry, even though people probably don't like to think about it, industry revolves around steel. And when, especially under Clinton, even before that, when the steel industries were closing down and they were building condominiums, I'm thinking to myself, what are these people doing? You know, how are they getting away with it? This is crazy. I couldn't understand the logic. But as soon as all the pieces started to fit together, I thought to myself, they're deliberately trying to destroy the industry in the United States. I just could not. You know, it's taken a long time to put the pieces together, but you know, when I realised they were doing it deliberately, I'm thinking, you know, how can a U.S. citizen stop that from happening? Because if they can't make steel, one of the greatest insults is you buy the jet engines for one of your jet fighters from overseas, and if you can't get the engines, you can't fly the planes.
Right. Now, you bring up a good point about the destruction of the industrial base of the United States. And, Len, do you have any comments on the fact that it started with the steel industry, and certainly we've seen other industries in the United States affected?
Right. Well, that's the only thing is that I think that, they're trying to tank the dollar so that they can promote their things like Caterpillar, John Deere tractors. I mean, there are still some things that are made in America, but you would measure the power of a country, at least in the past, by the amount of steel that it would produce. That was a key measure. So it's a very good point from Kevin.
Kevin, go ahead.
The other thing is, you look at some of the other countries. Now, I look at Russia. I mean, Russia has gone from they were just absolute communists. They've pretty well done a reverse on how they used to do things. And that country is absolutely filthy rich with every possible mineral that you could possibly require to have an industrialized nation. The only thing they don't have, I think, is rare earth for, you know, some of the high-speed electric motor servo-type industries, and they import that from China, and they buy certain minerals from Australia, which we're probably one of the only one or two suppliers in the world. But other than that, they're pretty self-sufficient. But they don't really need to suck up to anybody to get their industry going. And the other thing that they're doing, they're not dumbing down the people. I mean, they know that you need an educated lot of graduates who are right on the ball, and they're not destroying. As soon as you start destroying your population, your ability to think, you know, you destroy the industry.
Right. It's a legacy of the Soviet Union. Right.
Sorry. That's probably the absolute biggest thing that the United States government are destroying is that's the intelligence of the people. I'm not saying, hey, Americans are super intelligent, but Obama and Bush before him, they're trying awful hard to destroy that natural ability to have an industrial country. And that's the only way America can exist. I mean, you've got people who want to work. You've got very bright people. You've got a big, you know, home market. There's no good reason why everybody in the U.S. can't have a job. And I'm talking about a good job, a good paying job, because you've got minerals, you've got people, you've got a market, everything's there. The only reason why America's not going at 1,000 mile an hour is because those sleeve buckets at the top and those bankers, the Bilderbergs, they're just tearing the heart out of America.
Right, right.
You know?
And, of course, most of the American workers who are unemployed are sitting home watching Rupert Murdoch's Fox News and being dumped down even more every day, not to mention the other offerings he has on Fox, like, these idiotic reality shows and talent shows. I have to say that Murdoch is probably not one of the best exports that we receive from Australia, certainly not like Foster's Lager.
Hey, Wayne, I'm trying to do a deal on that one. You can keep Murdoch. Like, I'll give you 1,000 Murdochs. You give me one Ron Paul.
Right. And, do you have anybody? Is there anyone like him in Australia? Do you have any libertarians? Certainly, Kevin Rudd leaves a lot to be desired. I know.
You know, Kevin Rudd does, but he's probably the best of a bad bunch. The leadership of what we call our Republican Party, or it's called Liberal here, you know, they're just like the blind leading the blind. But they just, that party is completely decimated. It's full with a pile of bozos. It's led by, you know, slower and slower, dumber and dumber, and
yeah,
they don't have any sort of hope of kind of winning the next election. But you know what? I'm thinking that's probably orchestrated. They've got their boys in power, or boys and girls in power. I'm talking about the bankers. And
yes.
And Rudd is at the moment. Rudd is not doing too much to damage Australia. In fact, he's under the conditions, he's doing not a bad job. But
okay, well, let's give him credit where credit is due. Although he may be the best of the bad lot, he's at least he's looking out for Australia, which I think is a lot more than we can say about Barack Obama, because the fact that he's cutting all these deals with these bankers and these oligarchs around the world.
You know, Wayne, I'd like to see 20 American nuclear submarines surrounding England with their rockets pointing down at the Buckingham Palace, saying, "You give us the money and the wealth that you've raped from our country for the past nearly 100 years. Since 1913, you have screwed us absolutely to the wall. We want all that money back, plus we want interest." You know.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, thanks, Kevin, from calling from all the way down in Australia. Thanks for the kind words and the update on what's happening in Australia. And we'll be back with Len Bracken right after this break.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, this is Wayne Mattson. We're back with the Wayne Mattson Report to say roundup, and we only have a few minutes left. But I want also on this occasion of Columbus Day, which really should mark the Holocaust of 65 million Native Americans, North, Central, South America. Len, correct me if I'm wrong, but Andrew Jackson was always celebrated as somebody who was opposed to the idea of the central bank. I always found it ironic because he's on the $20 bill, whether that's worth anything or not. But I also want to play this short clip of Andrew Jackson's contribution to the genocide against the Native Americans, if we can play this clip.
We don't take my sunshine. Well, you know the story of Andy Jackson and his Indian fighters. Now, Jackson devised the Indian Removal Act. But his Indian fighters had a very peculiar preoccupation, and that was skinning the Indians on the battlefield. They used to make pants. They'd be able to take an Indian and skin him from the hip down and make themselves a pair of pants. Or they'd take, turn him over, two strips, you know, from his neck all the way down to his heel, and that'd be reins for their bridle. This was, of course, to strike terror into people's heart, but it sort of became a joke. Hence the phrase Redskins.
Oh, there you have it. Andrew Jackson skinning Indians to make pairs of pants from their skin. If that doesn't strike disgust and revulsion in anyone, I don't know what does. That just proves my point that the 65 million Indians, Native Americans, who were victimized by the Holocaust, just the awful things. But Len, wrapping this up, where do you see all this heading? These bankers, Kevin from Australia brought up London, the power of London, the city of London. Do you think there's any way to break the backs of these people?
Well, I'm looking right now at the website of the Tea Party Express, and I guess that's, some people are trying to have some grassroots opposition to what's going on. But as you well know, they're up against very powerful forces. I wondered if you might mention to the listeners your reporting on the on the Megrahi release and the relation that had to the Scottish banks.
Well, I mean, yeah, the Megrahi quid pro quo releasing this Libyan intelligence agent who obviously probably had nothing to do with Pan 103, but it just shows the backdoor deals that are made. This was Gordon Brown and also his political opponent, Alex Salmond, who's the first minister, the Scottish Nationalist minister in Scotland, all got together. It just shows that this graft and corruption goes across party lines. It doesn't matter whether it's the so-called left or so-called right. They all get together and cut these deals. But anyway, right. Okay, Len, thanks for joining us tonight. I want to thank Len Bracken for being a guest tonight on the Saturday Roundup, and we will be back with you next week at this very same time. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report.